Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I once again have senior blogger Matt Moore on the Skype line. Matt, what's new?
The All-Star ballot is back.
We've had an All-Star ballot for years, so that's factually incorrect.
So, they changed the All-Star ballot. They're going to change it today. The report. It's funny, the NBA does this thing where, like, NBA.com reports that the NBA, and I'm like, is that really a report? Like, how can you be reporting if you're the one saying it?
Yeah, why don't you just say, hey, this is what we're doing?
Yeah, so they're going to be changing the All-Star ballot, and they're moving to it's the Duncan stipulation, where they're getting rid of the center spot, and they're moving to three front court players. They haven't outlined it yet, but I'm assuming that they're going to keep point guard, shooting guard, and then, three front court players. I honestly wonder if it wouldn't be better just to do, like, wings and then point guards, and classify point guards as wings for the purposes of it. But, it's going to have some interesting effects. It won't change necessarily anything huge. It depends on, the question I think is going to be how the coaches deal with it, because if the coaches follow that to the letter of the law, if it extends to the reserves, then that's going to have an interesting impact on how they approach it versus feeling like, well, I need to get a backup center or whatever, because they're supposed to, quote, assemble a team, but we know that's crap. So this might open up more freedom for them to be like, well, okay, and it makes you wonder, like, could there be a year where there are just no centers? Isn't that possible? If Dwight was injured one year and if Bynum were to be injured as well, would it be possible for there to be no centers on All-Star ballot or an All-Star team?
I think it'll take time for this kind of stuff to happen, because I just don't know that you're going to have a lot of old school coaches still that are going to say, well, we got to have a center on the All-Star team. And I think you'll get guys playing their way into there. I think it'll be deserved too, because, you've got Marc Gasol, you've got guys like Roy Hibbert and Al Horford and Joakim Noah and, maybe Brooke Lopez if he's rebounding. I think you'll have guys who warrant All-Star consideration to the point where we're going to complain about it, but it's not going to be ridiculous if they make the All-Star team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it helps guys like Kevin Garnett, who are power forwards, that are playing center. It helps Chris Bosh. That's going to be, I think, the question immediately is whether, Garnett, if he has another standout season, if he can get more votes for the starter position than, say, Bynum does. If Bynum struggles in Philadelphia with the loss of the huge Laker fan contingent that votes, you could end up with LeBron, Carmelo, and KG as your starting three front court players, along with presumably, I would guess, Rose probably won't be back, so probably Rondo, and who is the best shooting guard in the East?
Wade.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that guy.
Yeah, he still plays.
Yeah, he's still all right. So it'd probably be Rondo, Wade, LeBron, Melo, and then theoretically KG. So I think that's kind of interesting. The small forward thing I think is kind of cool, because you can have with the front court players, it makes it easier for guys that play that 3-4 hybrid to get in, and that might have a little bit of a shift. Again, the West, I can't see it really being that way.
Why don't you just say this? It's going to give Josh Smith an actual chance to make the All-Star team.
Maybe I know I won't say that, because I think he's been so good the last 2 years, and he still has been.
Oh, I disagree. All right, we're going to get into this a little bit before we get into the Southwest preview. I don't think he's been so good lately. He's been very good on defense. I think his offense is an abomination, and we see fun dunks, and he's a good passer. But he shot like under 50% for true shooting percentage last year. Like, he's a bad offensive player most times. That just happens to put up stats because he gets a lot of chances.
Well, he's got a 21 PER, which is, I would have a hard time arguing that that's bad. Even with the rebounding impact, that's pretty hard to qualify that as bad. Part of it is, I think that it's one of those things where if you see a player, if you're watching a guy and there's something he does that you really don't like, it's going to stand out to you. Let's take an example of a case where someone theoretically overreacted. I don't know, Mike Conley. Let's just throw a name out there. If you see that a guy has trouble with something that really bugs you, like, I don't know. Let's say theoretically you have a big thing about the probe dribble and you really want to be able to see a point guard be able to probe the defense and back it back out. And if a player struggles with that and he has to turn completely back around, you're likely to think that he's, again, hypothetically, quote, the worst starting point guard in the league. Now,
might even call him overpaid.
Yeah, so you might, just theoretically. So in that instance, you know, you're overlooking a lot of what he does well because of the things that he does that really bug you and are important. It's not that they're not important, but they stick out more. And that's how it is with Josh Smith and that damn 20-foot jumper. Like, that's what it is that when he does that, because he's not good at it and because he shouldn't be doing that, everyone kind of says that's who he is. And the reality is that he's a very good post player.
He's just never there. He took more shots from 20 feet than he did at the rim, which I find to be a huge problem. And maybe that changes this year because Jeff Teague will be running the offense. It'll be more of a point guard, free-flowing offense. We won't have so much ISO. Not just ISO Joe, but...
See, that's what I'm worried about, though, because I'm like, the younger point guard is going to keep him in line. That's how that usually works.
I don't think he's going to keep him in line. I think just it's going to be a better system where he kind of just has to move towards the basket. He has to be closer to the rim to get the ball because I don't think Jeff Teague is going to kick it out to Josh Smith for a 20-footer when he's got Anthony Morrow and Kyle Korver sitting in the corners. Like, I just don't see that happening.
I mean, he took 150 from 24 feet last year. He took 252 from less than 5 feet and another 59 from 59 feet. Like, you know, the majority of his stuff is still happening at the rim. Like, that's still where, and you could say it should be, and I agree, but my point is just that he's not a player, he's not Mehmet Okur, right? He's not a guy that's big and has a lot of physical abilities inside that's just shooting jumpers. He does them too much, but that doesn't change the fact that what he's given them offensively and the play that he's shown, and there were long stretches both last year and the year before where he was, without question, not just one of the best players on the Hawks, or the best player on the Hawks, but the best player on the floor at times. Like, I mean, I've seen games where Josh Smith has outplayed everybody, and that to me is definitely a quality of an all-star, you know.
I mean, there have been games where Brandon Jennings outplays everybody.
He was almost worthy of being an all-star late last year and at the time of the all-star selection. Which is another problem with this whole process
because it's like, oh, you're an all-star because you played well for 2 months. Like, that's essentially what it ends up being. And
yeah, but I hate the other. I hate, oh, well, you know, you can't say that, you know, it's Darren Williams. But Darren Williams didn't play well. Play well this season, you get to be an all-star this season. And if you want to say, like, I don't see the point in having it be season-by-season all-stars. Otherwise, it should be just some sort of, like, general selection. I mean, the All-NBA team, I think, is a better place to be like, okay, well, he's just a good player, so we're going to select him.
What I'm saying is let's delay the playoffs. And just between the regular season and the playoffs, that's when we'll have All-Star Weekend. How about that?
No, because by the end of it, you just want to be done, man. Like, everybody is like...
Exactly. Like, and then we get to find out exactly who wants to be an All-Star.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know...
I don't really believe this, by the way. That's just trying to ruffle some feathers.
To your point, Synergy's got him at 25% from spot up last year. You know, he's a 25. He's an average shooter in that category, and he was classified as good in post up with a .805 points per possession, which is pretty good for a guy that's going to be the primary post threat, especially without Al Horford. He's good in every single area except for that damn jumper. And you know, we can argue all we want about that. I will still say that not only the numbers, but if you watch him consistently and the things that he does well, because it'd be like basically saying, like, well, Dwight goes, you know, he goes to that turnaround jumper that almost never goes in. Like, you know, it'd be like, well, he does that, therefore he's not an all-star. It's like, well, no, like, he has an annoying habit, but every player has annoying habits. It'd be like LeBron James jump passes too much, you know? I mean, there are bad things about it, but overall, when you factor his defense, his passing, his ability to drive and finish at the rim, you know, his ability to create steals and that post play, that to me, like, he was definitely worthy of an all-star spot.
I just, like, under 50% true shooting percentage. Like, that's astonishingly bad.
It is, and that's hard to argue against. I guess, you know, I wind up being like, you know, he was so effective. And part of it also is he drew a ton of slot. Like, he's pretty good drawing fouls, you know. So
sure, I mean, that's why I wanted to get in there and draw fouls.
Yeah, 12.4% he drew fouls out of the post. So, you know, and that's going to impact, you know, if you're drawing a ton of fouls, percentage is going to go down, and that's not necessarily the reason for it. It's just that he takes too many of those jumpers, and so I mean, I can see where you're coming from. I think it's okay. I'm willing to live with the true shooting percentage based off his position and everything else, but man, and it's one where we'll keep saying it. If he ever does abandon that jumper, he's definitely, like, there's going to be no question he's an All-Star.
Well, something we're not going to abandon, the Southwest Division.
Can't abandon the Southwest.
No. Part of the union.
Well, kind of. It's Texas, mostly.
Well, right. It's really their own union. But we do have a lot of teams in Texas that are very good, and the Houston Rockets.
Side story before we start this. When I moved to Texas in 2004, and I moved down there, and I was down there for my first job interview, and afterwards I was having a celebratory beer at the hotel. And I was in there, and he was like, oh, so you think about moving here? And I was like, yeah. And the bartender's like, so you know about the Republic of Texas thing? I was like, yeah, I know. Like everybody thinks that they should be their own, that they should be their own country. And he's like, no. Everyone here thinks they are their own country. There's no should. They believe they are their own. If you poll, there'd be a high percentage of people that believe they are their own country.
I haven't spent a lot of time in Texas, but it did feel like its own country. Also, Hawaii feels like its own country. I went to Hawaii one time, and when I saw people paying with American currency, I was like, "What is going on?" All right, this is an American state.
You have adapted all of our culture, you strange people.
And only in just 50 years, this is amazing.
It's weird because you keep thinking that you can finally bet that the Spurs are going to slide, and it's become a joke of a joke. It's become, you know, like, oh, every year we think the Spurs are going to be terrible, and every year they're still one of the top teams. And then it's like a joke about how we always say the Spurs are always going to, you know, we always say that. I'm to the point where, you know, there's as much reason to believe, I think, that there's going to be a slide as any this year. But I'm not willing to, just because it's one where, like, I can't factor logic or reasoning into my approach to the Spurs. Like, I have to hold on to, like, core tenets, which are, like, they're a bad defensive team, so they won't win the title. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, they're, at least in terms of, like, regular season, they're just killer. I mean, they're the way they've switched up their perimeter attack, and they're just so efficient. I mean, they almost shot 40% from three last year. Or maybe they did get 40%. I know they were right around there at the end of the year, which hasn't. I think it's only been done 7 times in history. I mean, they were just smothering with offense. Which, and then, you know, Tim Duncan. No, he's not the player he used to be, but he's pretty close to the same defender he used to be. I mean, his help defense is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I really like Kawhi Leonard. I enjoy Manu Ginobili more than I used to. There's a lot of reasons to really like this team. By the way, they shot 39% from three last year. Look that up for you. So just under 40.
Just under.
39.3. You know, they're really good offense. I've said this before. They play basketball the way that, if you were to think about conceptually, the guys that are really big basketball heads, like people on Twitter and everything, and even coaches, like, They play offense the way you want to see a team play offense. It's, everybody shares the ball. They always make that extra pass. They have a post presence to go through. They have versatile guys. They have smart players. Everyone makes the right play, and everyone gets back on defense. Like, they make the right plays so much on offense. They really play the right way, and that's like an overused phrase, but it's more of they are the ideal. They are like if the Greek gods were going to sculpt what they think basketball should look like, they would sculpt the Spurs offense.
Right.
Now, their defense is you know, I started this 2 years ago, the 2011 season. I started looking at later down the stretch. I started looking, because I noticed them in a Heat game. I was like, God, their rotations are terrible. I was like, they're not a good defensive team. And I started looking, and their slide was just phenomenal in terms of how bad it was getting. I was like, this is really they're popping in over 104 defensive efficiency consistently, game after game after game, and they were still winning because of the offense. But I was like, you know, even for a guy that loves offense like me, I understand that you have to play great defense in the playoffs. You can't survive. You know, and then there's a lot of reasons to think about that Grizzlies series as a fluke, even as a Grizzlies fan. Like, it's one where I think that the Grizzlies should be really proud of that as a franchise moment, and the Spurs should be like, well, Shane Battier hit the game winner in the opening game, and Manu Ginobili was hurt. There's a lot of reasons to be kind of sketchy about it. But then last year, it was weird because I was all convinced. I was like, it's going to happen again. I was like, their defense is still not good enough. Like, they're good, but they're just not good enough. And then they destroyed the Jazz, and I was like, well, it's a Jazz. That's fine. They're not prepared. Now I thought they would have a shot against the Clippers, and they didn't. Like, the Clippers had no shot whatsoever, and the Clippers just got destroyed. And then I was like, well, okay, maybe I was wrong. Maybe they just are that good. And then they won those first two games against the Thunder, and I was like, well, obviously I was wrong. And they are just that good. Like, there's just absolutely no way that I was right. I just completely missed on this. And the Spurs just, oh, no, there's that defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, it was there's that defense against Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But they just kept, the Thunder just kept running the same play down the stretch over and over. And didn't matter what adjustment they made. The Thunder just poured in points with that play, and it was kind of amazing because you could see the look on the Spurs' face, you could see on the look on Popovich's face of like, "Welp, we have nothing for this."
Well, it's one. There's two things I think are interesting. Project Spurs actually a couple months ago, the blog Project Spurs dropped a quote from Pop during the middle of the year where he said, "We're never gonna be that defensive team that we were in the middle of the 2000s."
Right.
I thought that was real. He was like, "We made a conscious decision with this roster, with what we had, to go to an offensive system." And then to me, that's really indicative because Spurs fans are they tend to think of it as we just haven't figured it out. And it's like, I don't think Pop thinks that. I think Pop's like, "Nope. Like, we're either going to be able to outscore them or we aren't. Like, the shots are going to go in or they're not. And if they don't, we're screwed because we can't stop anybody." And it's weird too because, you know, and I think you'll appreciate this from kind of a, you know, if we try and simplify things and not get so complicated because I oversimplify or overcomplicate them sometimes. I always get to Matt Bonner plays a really big role on that team.
He does.
A really big role, and that's great for the regular season. And Matt Bonner's a really fun guy, and I really love his work ethic and the fact that he's carved out a niche for himself. Can't defend in the playoffs. That's not happening.
Yeah.
Like, Danny Green struggled a little bit. I think he'll be better this year. But, you know, Gary Neal, they have a little bit. You know, DeJuan Blair, Tiago Splitter still got a ways to go defensively. Like, there are a number of players that you look at and you just say, you can't trust them defensively. You just cannot.
They've got a lot of really nice rotation players that cannot play defense. I mean, I would never play DeJuan Blair in a playoff game, even with his rebounding ability to get easy baskets inside. Like, I would never do it. Because he's going to miss every rotation, and he's just not big enough.
And 5 years ago, they're probably fine because Tiago Splitter plays a taller version of Fabrizio Oberto,
right.
And Tim Duncan is Tim Duncan.
Right.
But when Tim Duncan's not Tim Duncan from 5 years ago, that's when you get in this problem. And like, so it's not necessarily that they're entirely flawed. They're just dependent upon older players being what they were 5 years ago consistently. And Tim Duncan has moments where he's that guy, but he's not that guy every single minute. Now there's Ginobili and Parker. You know, Parker's really honestly always been kind of a defensive problem, and a lot of that's just because of the speed of opposing point guards. But like he and Westbrook, I kind of knew were going to play to largely a standstill based off of the fact that neither could guard each other. Like that was just the result. Like if you've got a good point guard, you can kind of neutralize that because Parker's not going to be able to impact him. You know, and the thought is that Kawhi Leonard can step up and be the kind of wing defender to make a huge impact, but that's a lot of pressure on a sophomore. You know, I love Kawhi's long-term prospects, but I just don't think that you know next year he's going to be able to get there.
I mean, and with Kawhi, like I love Kawhi, but ideally he would be 2 to 3 inches taller. You know, I mean, because you need someone to defend Durant, you need someone to defend wing players in the Western playoffs, and he's not bad, and he's not abnormally short for his position. You just, even with his wingspan and with his hands, like you just want him to be 2 inches taller because no one would be able to score on him. And here he can bother people. He could be a Shane Battier type of bothering people, but Shane Battier probably needed to be a little bit longer and an inch or two taller because to really last long term and really shut that guys down. And Kawhi is just not quite there physically.
Yeah. The Mavericks, man, I don't
know. I hate talking about the Mavericks, not because I dislike the Mavericks. I love Mark Cuban. I love the organization. But especially with Dirk's injury, like I just do not love this team. They're not a bad team. They've got nice role players. But it's just – I almost feel like they're pointless in a way because – it just seems like they're in transition either post-Dirk or trying to get into post-Dirk or trying to get that next wave of whatever their identity is. And right now their identity just seems to be, hey, let's try to maintain what we've got and maybe we'll see what happens. But it's just...
Yeah, I mean, it's smart, though, because they've still got long-term flexibility.
Sure. I mean, they're doing it nicely. They're just in that weird limbo stage of a franchise's progression.
I mean, this is a figuring it out year, you know.
Sure.
It's one where, like, and a lot of it is, I like a lot of the guys on this team. I don't like what they're going to be asked to do. I like Darren Collison. I don't like him as the primary offensive weapon. I like O.J. Mayo. I don't like him as the primary, like, tip of the spear. I like Elton Brand. I don't like him as the primary backup big. I like Chris Kamen, I guess, enough. I don't like him as a starting center, you know, on down the line. I still like Sean Marion, and, you know, Vince Carter will do a fine job at the wing coming off the bench.
Look at you complimenting Vince Carter.
Yeah, I'm kind of sold on him, I was really impressed with him last year. I watched a lot of him last year and was actually like, you know, for what he is, he's okay. And also part of it is like when you start getting closer to the guys and seeing how much they actually physically hurt, it gets a lot harder to be like, you're weak and you don't play enough. It's like, oh, you're actually in physical pain and like, you know, if I stub my toe, I don't work for half an hour. So,
right.
You know, it's like, it kind of changes your perception. Buboz is still a question mark. Dominique Jones, still a question mark. Those guys haven't come alive. You know, Jay Crowder, maybe he's going to shock us.
I like Jay Crowder. He's a nice player. He's another guy you wish was 2 inches taller.
Right. And then you look at the rest of it. And so, it's, you know, there's going to be nights when Dirk's going to be great, but Dirk gave everything in 2011 to get that title. He gave – I feel like he almost sacrificed part of his, like, body and soul just to get that title. And I don't know if he's ever going to be the same because I don't know if he ever has to be the same because he got bad, you know, like his career was fantastic and then he validated it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they'll be pretty good, sure. I mean,
which, God, it drives me nuts that he had to validate his career. Like, there were people who would say Dirk is soft, Dirk isn't clutch, and then he won the title and then they're like, oh, he's always been clutch. He's always been a hard-nosed player. It's like, seriously, like that part of basketball just drives me insane, and it's part of sports and culture with everything, but it's just like Dirk is phenomenal and an all-time talent, and he was, I mean, God, there were few players on the court you wanted to have the ball at the end of the game. One, because you couldn't stop his shot, and two, he was arguably the best shooter on the floor every time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. I think he's when I really started looking at what he's done throughout his career, I watched like a ton of a video on him before the 2011 season, actually, and was just like, this guy's incredible. Like, he's a guy that took me, you have to know basketball really well and be a hardcore fan to appreciate how wonderful he really is. Memphis. I think Memphis is going to be a better team than they were last year and win fewer games. That's the kind of the weird thing I think is probably going to end up happening.
Win fewer games total or just like projected out over an 82 game season?
Say again?
Like when you say fewer games, you mean like what they were on pace for in an 82 game season?
Yeah, I mean they're not going to win fewer than they did last year in the 66, but their winning percentage is going to be lower because of how much tougher the West got.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question about this because I feel like that's a pretty widely held sentiment about Memphis this year. And 2 years ago, and I think this all happened for good reasons, it allowed certain players to grow, but 2 years ago, Rudy Gay was out for a good chunk of the season. Last year, Zach Randolph was out for almost the whole season. And now they'll presumably have both of these guys healthy. And if they're healthy going in with their front court, why are they going to have a worse record? I mean, to me, it just seems like they're almost poised to really, you know, win 50 games and just be a kind of a force, at least in the regular season, because it looks like they'll be healthy.
Well, there's two things. One, Randolph looks to be he's in that, we talked about preseason, right? He's in that best shape of his career.
Right.
He's fantastic. He slimmed down and all that. Gasol's taken a real beating over the last 2 years because of how much he's had to handle with Randolph's injuries and just everything.
Olympics and all that.
Olympics, and he doesn't have a real backup center. He has to play long questions. And you know, Randolph is one where he's getting older, and that's going to have an impact, and you don't know how that's going to go. But even if they're great, you know, this team doesn't have – Mike Conley has shown a lot of great offensive abilities in the preseason, and he's been really good the last 2 years, really good the last 2 years. He's going to have to be so good, though, and it's one where that, you know, he can't create for – it's one where, well, he can't, you know, create shots for people and have one of those people be him. He can't create – you know, yeah. He can't, like, drive and kick to himself. Right, and they don't have any perimeter shooters.
Right,
I like Jared Bayless. I'm an unabashed Jared Bayless.
You love Jared Bayless.
But the funny thing is that everyone thinks that it's like I think he's this great player that's gonna take over a team, and I abandoned that thing long ago. He's just a player I like watching, but I understand his limitations, and I know what he's going to do and not do.
I love him. I do love him in the like seventh man in the rotation, scoring guard coming off the bench kind of thing. And not that he can't be a point guard, because I think he's found a good balance, but just that, not even like a Jason Terry type, but really what you wanted OJ Mayo to be. I like him better in that role than OJ Mayo.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, you know, kind of how that, the big thing with Mayo is that a lot of it was coaching and kind of fit and how that wound up working out. Like, there's a lot of factors to think that Mayo could be better than he was the last few years in Memphis. But, you know, he could also just be he's an efficient shooter, and that's it. You know, Tony Allen's going to play a lot of minutes, and that's always scary in the offensive end, even though I think he's going to be, you know, one of the candidates for Defensive Player of the Year again. Their defense is going to be tough. It's just a matter of how much better the West guy. It's also – it's hard for me because I like Memphis's team concept so much more than I like the Clippers.
Yeah.
But then, like, the Clippers have Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and Caron Butler and Chauncey Billups and Jamal Crawford.
Well, yeah. Hold on. It sounded like the third and fourth players, you meant that as a compliment.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is like, you could say that, but then it's like, well, the Grizzlies have Tony Allen and...
I would take Tony Allen over combining the ability of Caron Butler and Chauncey Billups of what's left at this point.
Ouch. And I think that that's, maybe that's where it comes down to, and that's why it's going to be close. I think that they're going to be right there. I think, you know, I think Nuggets, Clippers, Grizzlies... And, yeah, Nuggets, Clippers, Grizzlies are probably going to be all right there for 4, 5, 6. And
sure.
There's going to be some combo of those guys. Like, I think most NBA guys are going to say that Spurs, Clippers, Grizzlies, Nuggets are going to face each other in some combination. That's going to be the 3, 6, 4, 5 matchups.
Yeah, that's probably the same. I think I put Denver second in the West just because I like their regular season stuff, but I mean, if they ended up anywhere from 2 to 6, one, I don't think that's a bad range to be in, and two, like, that just, like, it's probably a difference of 2 wins throughout the whole season.
Like, it wouldn't shock me if the Nuggets beat the Spurs in the first round. It wouldn't shock me if the Clippers beat the Nuggets in the first round. It wouldn't shock me if the Grizzlies beat the Clippers in the first round. It wouldn't shock me if the Grizzlies beat the Spurs again in the first round. Like, I feel like 3, 4, 5, and 6, all of those teams are going to be right there, and they can all beat each other.
Sure.
And the idea is going to, like, Spurs fans are going to be really upset at that, but, like, those teams are very good defensive teams. You could say, well, what about the Clippers last year? Well, the Clippers were really banged up, and I think that they're going to, if you project that they're going to improve, then that's probably going to give them a better chance.
And Jamal Crawford worked on shooting for the first time. that astounded. I mean, I read the story, and I probably read it 3 or 4 times, just like, am I missing something here? Like, there's no way he's never worked on his game before since he's joined. Like, he's 32 years old.
Yeah, you know, Steven Jackson doesn't work in the offseason either. I think it's a thing with those guys.
Yeah, but he's so trill.
Like, those guys, it's funny watching the generational shift. There's an attitude change between those guys and LeBron's class, and there's a shift between LeBron's class and the Rose, Howard, Durant class, and in terms of the kind of work that goes on in the offseason.
Yeah.
Maybe not, Howard's probably not a great example of that, but... Like, Rose and Durant are basketball junkies who are always in the gym and they're always working. And you see that with a lot of even guys in their class, that they're very committed to really working very, very hard. And a lot of the guys from that generation think of basketball as a lifestyle. And it's it's their job, but, like, they're very committed to protecting their lifestyle personally. They've produced on the court, so it's hard for me to be like, they should have done more. It's like, well, you know. Jamal Crawford could have been better, but Jamal Crawford's also been, a pretty, like, he's not really good. He's pretty good. And that's,
right.
you know, to me, I'm always like, being a pretty good shooting guard in the NBA is kind of tough to do. So I'm going to give him credit for that. You know, being a pretty good shooting, you know, small forward in the NBA and a great defender is pretty hard. So I'm going to give Steven Jackson credit for that. Houston, I'm with you. Like, you know, it's one where I can see – I always tend to think this where it's like if I find myself going, well, if this happens and this could happen, and if I say a lot of coulds and ifs,
yeah,
it's a bad sign. You know, like you need R's when you're considering how good a team is going to be.
I think here's the thing with Houston is you're looking for three things. Sadly, I don't think this should be the main focus of him, but you are looking at the whole travel phenomena with Royce White and how he's holding up. Because I do think, like, one, it's an interesting story to see how open he is with his anxiety, and it's stuff that you've written about, stuff that a lot of people have really opened up about, and it's been pretty great. You want to see how he's doing with that, and sad, like, just as a basketball fan, you want to see how his basketball play is because of that, just to see how he's overcoming. Because I think in our minds, like, at least in someone who's not as educated with the disorder, it's like, well, if he's playing well, then he's dealing with it fine, which isn't necessarily true.
Ow.
And so, but I think, like, that is from a basketball standpoint, that's a fascinating story. You want to see?
Really, I mean, they're a fascinating team. Like, the thing. Like, they're probably going to be a bad team, but they're going to be fascinating as all get out. You got the Lin storyline.
Yeah, you've got Lin, and you want to see. And here's the thing: if he plays well, but they lose, does it legitimize the hype around him? Or, does he have to lead them to victories?
No, I don't think he has to lead them to victories. I mean, I think Lin has, well, yeah, he does. He's got to, if they lose, then, because that's the way, because New York media has too much of an influence.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. And that's just, I mean, that's just how it is. Like,
yeah.
Just I think it's more complicated than that, but I also, I mean, you know, we're going to have to see if he is going to, like, when the book got out on him last year, things got a lot harder for him. And if he hasn't figured out how to break that trap, he's going to be an issue.
Yeah, but, all right, the book got out on him, it was like, hey, force him left because he only goes right, and that was valid, but didn't also the book get out on him when Melo came back, and they, you know, there was a problem, and this isn't absolve him because he's got to figure it out as the point guard, but there was a problem seeing how the parts matched, you know, how they fit together. And
I agree. It's more matter of, I mean, it's preseason again. Maybe he'll bust out, but it's weird to see a guy that, you know, doesn't have a huge track record to be struggling in preseason.
That's true.
Like, we don't have a whole lot of track record on him anyway. So it doesn't look right. Now, his assist has been really good. He looks like his passing is pretty quality, but the shooting has been an issue because teams are basically, they're not only doing the trap, but they're also basically just being like, well, shoot. And he's going to have to shoot on this team because they don't have a whole lot of shooters.
Yeah.
I think Terrence Jones is going to be awesome.
I'm not a Terrence Jones fan. I know you are.
Well, I'm not. That's the thing is, I wasn't last year. Going to the draft, I wasn't. I was like, well, you know, he was like, he's athletic, but he's Josh Smith. He keeps taking those damn jumpers. But, you know, he's going to work on the boards and on the inside. That's why I've been impressed with him early on, both in summer league and in preseason. Like, he looks like he wants to do the dirty work inside.
Yeah.
As long as he does that, even if he does it just for this year and then fades back to being Josh Smith and taking too many long jumpers, you know, at least this year he could be good.
That's a trade asset, at least.
Yeah, Kevin Martin's got to get traded. that's
I can't wait for him to start pouting. It happens every year, and I'm just so sick of that guy. I know Kings fans love him because he was their only thing for a while, but that guy's attitude sucks.
One of the things I think was amazing, though, is Kevin Martin was, you know, like, you know, everyone had problems with Mikhail last year. Like, Kyle Lowry had problems with Mikhail. Everyone had problems with Mikhail. And they asked him about this year, and his response was, you know, that was last year. Like, didn't, like, deny it, didn't, like, get around it. Like, it was mostly like, well, that was last year, we'll see. And it was like, oh, this is going to go great. This is going to be fantastic. Like, so, I mean, at least they can make a big move if they want. At the deadline, they've got enough assets still left over from the Dwight accumulation to be able to make a move if they need to. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I think they'll struggle. But, you know, they'll be fun to watch, I think, on certain nights. I don't think they're going to be abysmal. They're not going to be painful to watch. Hornets fans are sold that they're going to make the playoffs.
Hornets fans are sold on a lot of things.
I think Anthony Davis is going to be great. I think Eric Gordon's going to be injured. I think Rivas Vasquez cannot be your starting point guard. I think having Austin Rivers and Eric Gordon in the same backcourt is going to be a bad idea. I think having Ryan Anderson play small forward is a bad plan. I think Robin Lopez is a good complement for right now with Davis, but only for developmental reasons, and the rest of the roster is weak.
I'd rather have Jason Smith next to Davis personally. Inside.
I would agree with that. So I mean, it's just one where like their offense. I think their defense is going to be great. I think Monty Williams is going to pull a great defense out of it. Yeah. They're going to be one of those good defensive teams that just doesn't quite have the scoring to get over the hump. And
I mean,
they'll get a point guard and they'll get a small forward and they'll be good to go. But for right now, they're going to struggle.
I look at them and over the last couple months, I was like, I don't know that they're going to. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but. This Hornets team could be a 35-40 win team just looking at how good they were last year despite having nothing on the roster and then what they've acquired. I mean, they've essentially acquired Anthony Davis, Austin Rivers, Ryan Anderson, and Eric Gordon because he played like 8 games last year or something like that. And I'm like, that's a lot to add to a team that really overachieved. And it's preseason, and you can't take a whole lot from them, but I've watched them a lot in preseason. I'm just like, oh, my God. I wasn't a Grievous Vasquez fan to begin with, but Jesus. Derek Collison destroyed him the other night.
He played really well last year, but there were much lower expectations last year. And, I mean, I think it's going to be tough for him. I just think it's going to be a hard situation, so... I think they'll get through it, so it'll be better in the years to come.
Do you think they definitely finish ahead of Houston?
No, I think they finish in the basement. I think Houston finishes above them. I think that by the end of the year, Lynn starts to figure some things out, gets better. I think that one of the rookies comes out and is good enough to be, a third player, and they've got, a Sheik and Kevin Martin and just enough stability with the other guys on that team to be able to grind out some wins and they finish on a stronger note. I think that they'll finish with a better record than the Hornets, but they'll still make the playoffs.
The Rockets will make the playoffs?
No, neither team makes the playoffs.
Oh, neither team makes the playoffs. Okay. I was about to hold you hostage for the next hour to make you explain that. But since I don't have to, we won't. And thank you for joining us. And I believe we'll talk tomorrow with a special guest. This is Zach Harper for Matt Moore at CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Reminder, you can tweet us at the Eye on Basketball Twitter account for title suggestions for the podcast. You get to name it, we get to talk on it, and we will talk to you tomorrow.